made a slide 10 feet. Half of my face scraped along the thorn-covered ground and came up covered with little bull-headed diablitos. "Hey, Tony, you missed the fight." Horse smiled into my face. He still held me in a tight embrace. His horse eyes were wild with excitement, and his big yellow teeth chomped on something that smelled like spoiled eggs. I wanted to curse him, but I glanced up and saw Florence standing, waiting for my response. "That was a real good tackle, Horse," I said as calmly as possible. "Real good. Now let me up." I stood up and began pulling thorns out of my bloody cheek. "What fight?" Florence asked. He dusted my jacket. "Roque and Willie, down in the bathroom." Lloyd came puffing along with the rest of the gang.
"Chingada! You know how Roque is always teasing Willie?"
"Yeah," we nodded.
"Willie's your friend, ain't he?" Ernie asked.
"Yes," I answered. Big Willie was one of the farm boys from Delia. He and George were always together. They never messed around with anyone. Willie was big, but Roque picked on him because Willie never defended himself. He was timid, and Roque was a bully.
"Roque's always singing, 'Willie, Willie, 2x4, can't get into the bathroom door, so he does it on the floor,'" Bones panted.
"And he always pushes you when you're peeing and makes you wet your pants."
Lloyd closed his eyes in disgust. He took out a Hershey bar.
"Halfers," Bones growled.
Lloyd threw a piece of chocolate on the ground, and while Bones retrieved it, he stuck the rest in his mouth.
"Chingada!
That wasn't halfers," Bones growled, chewing on chocolate and sand.
"I had my fingers crossed," Lloyd said haughtily.
Then he stuck out his tongue, and the chocolate mess in his mouth dripped.
"Ugh!"
Bones went wild, leaped on Lloyd, and began strangling him. Then Horse got excited again and jumped on Bones.
"You could be sued for that," Lloyd threatened as he pulled himself free from the pile.
We continued walking and left Bones and Horse behind, slugging and kicking at each other.
"So why the fight?"
Florence asked impatiently.
"Well, after school," Lloyd said, "Roque went in and pushed Willie, but Willie must have been waiting because he stepped aside and Roque almost fell in the bowl. Anyway, Willie continued peeing, and he peed all over Roque's shoes."
"It was funny as hell," Ernie said, "seeing Roque standing there and Willie peeing on his shoes."
Horse and Bones caught up to us.
"And then old Roque slugs Willie," Lloyd laughed.
"But Willie just stands there," Ernie added.
"And then Willie busts Roque," Horse cried out.
"And there's blood all over the place," Bones panted,
and the thought of blood got them going all over again. Horse whinnied and reared up, and Bones was on him like a mad dog.
"Roque was bleeding like a pig and crying, and his shoes all wet."
"Man, don't mess with Willie," Ernie cautioned.
"Hey, he's your friend, ain't he, Tony?" he repeated.
"Yeah," I answered. I knew Ernie always weighed friendships. If Willie had lost the fight, Ernie would be bothering me about it. But as it was, I had somehow gained respect because I was the friend of a farm boy who made Roque's nose bloody.
"Hey, how come those guys don't have to go to catechism?"
Abel asked.
"They'd miss the bus, stupid,"
Florence said.
"Protestants don't have to go either," Ernie nodded.
"They go to hell," Bones cried out.
"No, they don't," Florence defended the Protestants. "Red's a Protestant. Do you think he'll go to hell?"
"You'll go to hell too, Florence," Horse shouted. "You don't believe in God." So what? Florence shrugged. If you don't believe in God, then there's no hell to go to.
But why do you go to catechism? I asked him.
He shrugged. I want to be with you guys. I just don't want to feel left out, he said softly.
Come on, let's go tease the girls, Bones shouted. He had caught scent of the girls who were just up ahead. The others rallied to his cry and they went off howling like a pack of wild dogs.
But what if you're left out of heaven in the end? I asked Florence. We had both hung back.
Then that would be hell, he nodded. I think if there is a hell, it's just a place where you're left all alone with nobody around you. Man, when you're alone, you don't have to burn. Just being by yourself for all of time would be the worst punishment the old man could give you.
The old man? I asked, my question intermingled with a feeling of sadness for Florence.
God, he answered. I thought you didn't believe.
I don't.
Why?
I asked.
I don't know. He kicked at a rock. My mother died when I was 3. My old man drank himself to death and...
He paused and looked towards the church, which already loomed ahead of us. His inquiring angelic face smiled.
And my sisters are whores, working at Rosie's place.
The wind swirled around us and made a strange noise, like the sound of doves crying at the river. I wondered if Andrew had known one of Florence's sisters when he went to Rosie's. That, and the pity I had for him, made me feel close to Florence.
So I ask myself, he continued, how can God let this happen to a kid? I never asked to be born, but he gives me birth, a soul, and puts me here to punish me. Why? What did I ever do to him to deserve this, huh?
For a moment, I couldn't answer. The questions Florence had posed were the same questions I wanted answered. Why was the murder of Narciso allowed? Why was evil allowed?
Maybe it's like the priest said, I finally stammered. Maybe God puts obstacles in front of us so that we will have to overcome them. And if we overcome all the hard and bad things, then we'll be good Catholics and earn the right to be with him in heaven.
Florence shook his head.
I thought about that, he said. But the way I figure it, if God is really as smart as the priest says, then he wouldn't have needed any of that testing us to see if we're good Catholics.
Look, how do you test a 3-year-old kid who doesn't know anything? God is supposed to know everything, all right? Then why didn't he make this earth without bad or evil things in it? Why didn't he make us so that we would always be kind to each other? He could have made it so that it was always summer, and there's always apples in the trees, and the water at the Blue Lake is always clean and warm for swimming. Instead, he made it so that some of us get polio when we go swimming, and we're crippled for life. Is that right?
I don't know.
I shook my head, and I didn't.
Once everything was all right. In the Garden of Eden, there was no sin, and man was happy, but we sinned.
Bullshit, we sinned, Florence disagreed.
Old Eve sinned. But why should we have to suffer because she broke the rules, huh?
But it wasn't just breaking the rules, I countered. I guess because I was still trying to hold on to God. I didn't want to give him up like Florence had. I didn't think that I could live without God.
What was it? He asked.
They wanted to be like him. Don't you remember the priest saying the apple contained the knowledge that would make them know more things? Like God, they would know about good and about evil. He punished them because they wanted knowledge.
Florence smiled. That still doesn't seem right, does it? Why should knowledge hurt anyone? We go to school to learn. We even go to catechism to learn.
Yes, I answered. There seemed to be so many pitfalls in the questions we asked. I wanted answers to the questions, but would the knowledge of the answers make me share in the original sin of Adam and Eve?
And if we didn't have any knowledge? I asked.
Then we would be like the dumb animals of the fields, Florence replied. Animals, I thought. Were the fish of the golden carp happier than we were? Was the golden carp a better god?
Last year Maxie got polio, Florence was going on, and my cousin got dragged by that damned horse and got his skull busted. They found him 2 weeks later along the river, half eaten away by the crows and buzzards. And his mom went crazy. Is that right?
No, I answered. It's not right. We came out of the dusty alley and onto the windswept, barren grounds that surrounded the church. The massive brown structure rose into the dusty sky and held the cross of Christ for all to see. I had listened to Florence's heresy, but the God of the church had not hurled his thunder at me. I wanted to call out that I was not afraid.
My father says the weather comes in cycles, I said instead. There are years of good weather, and there are years of bad weather.
I don't understand, Florence said.
Perhaps I didn't either, but my mind was seeking answers to Florence's questions.
Maybe God comes in cycles, like the weather, I answered.
Maybe there are times when God is with us, and times when he is not.
Maybe it's like that now. God is hidden. He will be gone for many years, maybe centuries.
I talked rapidly, excited about the possibilities my mind seemed to be reaching.
But we can't change the weather, Florence said, and we cannot ask God to return.
No, I nodded. But what if there were different gods to rule in his absence?
Florence could not have been more surprised by what I said than I. I grabbed him by the collar and shouted, "What if the Virgin Mary or the Golden Carp ruled instead of..." In that moment of blasphemy, the wind swirled around me and drowned my words, and the heavens trembled with thunder. I gasped and looked up at the bell tower.
Dong!
The first clap of bell thunder split the air. I turned and cringed at its sound. I crossed my forehead and cried, "Forgive me, Lord!" Then the second loud ring sounded.
"Come on, Tony," Florence pulled me. "We'll be late."
We ran up the steps past Horse and Bones, who were swinging like monkeys on the bell ropes. We hurried to get in line, but Father Burns had seen us. He grabbed Florence and pulled him out of line, and he whispered to me, "I would not have expected you to be late, Tony. I'll excuse you this time, but take care of your company, for the devil has many ways to mislead." I glanced back at Florence, but he nodded that I go on. The line moved past the water fonts where we wet our fingers and genuflected as we made the sign of the cross. The water was icy. The church was cold and musty. We marched down the aisle to the front pews. The girls' line filed into the right pew, and the boys went to the left.
"Enough!"
The father's voice echoed in the lonely church, and the bells that called us were silent. Horse and Bones came running to join us. Then the father came. I took a chance and glanced back. Florence's punishment for being late was to stand in the middle of the aisle with his arms outspread. He stood very straight and quiet, almost smiling.
The afternoon sun poured in through one of the stained glass windows that lined the walls, and the golden hue made Florence look like an angel. I felt sorry for him, and I felt bad that he had been punished, while I had been excused.
"Let us pray," Father Burns said, and knelt. We followed suit, kneeling on the rough, splintery kneeboards of the pew. Only Florence remained standing, holding the weight of his arms, which would become numb like lead before catechism was over.
Padre nuestro, que estás en los cielos, I prayed to myself, sharing my prayers with no one.
Everyone else prayed in English. Down the row, I heard Bones faking it.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
His mouth moved to the words, but he didn't know them. His head was bowed, his eyes closed, and he looked so devout that no one could doubt his sincerity. Then the priest quizzed us on some lessons we had already been through.
"Who made you?" he asked.
"God made me," we answered in unison.
"Why did God make you?"
he asked, and I saw him look down the aisle at Florence.
"God made us to love, honor, serve, and obey him."
"Where is God?"
"God is everywhere."
"At Rosie's," Bones whispered and rolled his eyes.
Father Burns didn't hear him.
"How many persons are there in one God?"
he continued.
"Three, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost."
"They have to squeeze in tight."
Horse grinned with his ugly horse teeth, and he took the white stuff he had been picking from them and wiped it on his pants.
"The Ghost," Bones said secretly.
"The Holy Ghost."
Father Burns went on to discuss the difference between mortal and venial sins. His explanation was very simple, and in a way, frightful. Venial sins were small sins, like saying bad words or not going to the Stations of the Cross during Lent. If you died with a venial sin on your soul, you could not enter heaven until the sin was absolved by prayers or rosaries or masses from your family on earth. But if you died with a mortal sin on your soul, you could never enter heaven. Never. It was frightening to think of missing Mass on Sunday, then dying, and for that one mortal sin to go to hell forever.
"If you die with a venial sin on your soul, where do you go?" he asked.
"To purgatory," Rita answered.
The girls always knew the exact answers. I knew most of the answers, but I never raised my hand, because I often wanted to ask questions, and I knew it would displease Father if I did. Really, the only one who ever asked any questions was Florence, and today he was doing penance.
"That's right, Rita," he smiled. "And what is purgatory?"
"Purga,"
Abel whispered. The boys giggled.
"I know, I know,"
Agnes waved enthusiastically, and Father smiled.
"It's a place where souls are cleaned so they can go to heaven."
"And if you die with a mortal sin on your soul?"
he asked, and his voice was cold. The church seemed to shudder from a blast of wind outside, and when it settled, a side door opened, and an old lady dressed in black hobbled up the side aisle to the altar of the Virgin. She lighted one of the candles in a red glass, and then she knelt to pray.
"Hell,"
Ida gasped, sucking in her breath. The father nodded.
"And is there any escape from hell?"
He raised his finger. We nodded no in silence.
"No,"
he shouted and slapped his hands so we all jumped in our seats.
"There is no hope in hell. Hell is the place of eternal damnation. The fires of hell burn forever and ever."
"Forever and ever," Agnes said thoughtfully. for eternity, Father Burns said emphatically. He reached under his frock and pulled out a tattered, well-worn copy of the catechism book. He hardly ever used it, because he knew it by heart, but now he fumbled through and pointed. Look there on page 17. Eternity. What does the word eternity mean? We turned to page 17. Forever, Agnes said. Without end, Rita shuddered. About 20 years, Bones growled. He hadn't raised his hand, and he made everyone laugh, so he had to go up to Father Burns and hold out his hands, palms up. Father Burns took the flat board out he kept for such occasions, and laid into Bones. One swat of the board was enough to blister the palms, but Bones didn't seem to feel it. He nodded happily and said, "Thank you, Father," then came back to sit down. I saw the old woman at the Virgin's altar turn and nod approvingly when she saw Father Burns strike Bones. Now, I'm going to tell you a story that will teach you how long eternity lasts. Now keep in mind, this is how long your soul will be burning in hell if you die with the black spots of mortal sins on it. First, try to imagine. Our whole country is a mountain of sand. A mountain of sand so high that it reaches to the clouds, and so wide that it stretches from one ocean to the other. Gee whiz! Abel's eyes opened wide. Horse, sensing something he could not understand, began to get nervous. Bones rolled his eyes. We all waited patiently for Father's story to develop, because we knew he had a way of telling stories that very clearly illustrated the point he wanted to make. I thought of Florence, holding his arms outstretched for eternity. Now, suppose across the ocean there is a flat country. The ocean is very wide, and it takes weeks to cross it, right? But you want to move this huge mountain of sand from here to there. Get a boat, Horse nodded nervously. No, Horse, Father Burns groaned. Keep quiet. Listen. Now, girls, he turned to them, how long do you think it would take to move this mountain of sand all the way across the ocean until you have the mountain over there and an empty place here? Several hands went up, but he only smiled and relished his question. He grinned. Before you answer, let me tell you how you have to move that enormous mountain of sand. And it's not with a boat like Horse says. Everyone laughed. A little bird, a sparrow, is going to move that mountain for you. And the sparrow can only hold one little grain of sand in its beak. It has to pick up only one grain of sand, fly all the way across the wide ocean, put down the grain of sand, then fly all the way back for another grain of sand. It takes the little bird weeks just to fly across the ocean, and each time it carries only one grain of sand. It would never finish. June shook her head sadly. Just in a bucket of sand, there must be a million grains. And to move that would take thousands of years. But to move the whole mountain of sand? She ended her sentence in despair. Horse whinnied and began to bolt in his pew. And Bones had latched his teeth to the back of the pew and was viciously tearing at it, his eyes rolling wildly all the time, and the white froth came foaming from his mouth. Even Abel and Lloyd and the girls seemed nervous with the impending conclusion of the story. Is that how long eternity is? Agnes asked bravely. Is that how long the souls have to burn?
No, Father Burns said softly.
and we looked to him for help. But instead, he finished by saying, "When the little bird has moved that mountain of sand across the ocean, that is only the first day of eternity." We gasped and fell back in our seats, shuddering at the thought of spending eternity in hell. The story made a great impression on us. Nobody moved. The wind whistled around the church, and as the sun sank in the west, one penetrating ray of light gathered the colors of the stained glass window and softly laid them, like flowers, around the Virgin's altar. The old woman who had been praying there was gone. In the dark aisle of the church, Florence stood, his numbed arms outstretched, unafraid of eternity. Dieciocho. Ash Wednesday. There is no other day like Ash Wednesday. The proud and the meek, the arrogant and the humble, are all made equal on Ash Wednesday. The healthy and the sick, the assured and the sick in spirit, all make their way to church in the gray morning or in the dusty afternoon. They line up silently, eyes downcast, bony fingers counting the beads of the rosary, lips mumbling prayers. All are repentant. All are preparing themselves for the shock of the laying of the ashes on the forehead and the priest's agonizing words, "Thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return." The anointment is done, and the priest moves on. Only the dull feeling of helplessness remains. The body is not important. It is made of dust. It is made of ashes. It is food for the worms. The winds and the waters dissolve it and scatter it to the four corners of the earth. In the end, what we care most for lasts only a brief lifetime. Then, there is eternity. Time forever. Millions of worlds are born, evolve, and pass away into nebulous, unmeasured skies. And there is still eternity. Time always. The body becomes dust and trees and exploding fire. It becomes gaseous and disappears. And still, there is eternity. Silent, unopposed, brooding, forever. But the soul survives. The soul lives on forever. It is the soul that must be saved, because the soul endures. And so when the burden of being nothing lifts from one's thoughts, the idea of the immortality of the soul is like a light in a blinding storm. "Dear God," the spirit cries out, "my soul will live forever." And so we hurried to catechism. The trying 40 days of Lent lay ahead of us, then the shining goal, Easter Sunday, and First Holy Communion. Very little else mattered in my life. Schoolwork was dull and uninspiring compared to the mysteries of religion. Each new question, each new catechism chapter, each new story seemed to open up 1,000 facets concerning the salvation of my soul. I saw very little of Ultima, or even of my mother and father. I was concerned with myself. I knew that eternity lasted forever, and a soul, because of one mistake, could spend that eternity in hell. The knowledge of this was frightful. I had many dreams in which I saw myself, or different people, burning in the fires of hell. One person especially continually haunted my nightmares. It was Florence. Inevitably, it was he whom I saw burning in the roaring inferno of eternal damnation. But why, I questioned, the hissing fires? Florence knows all the answers. "But he does not accept," the flames lisped back. "Florence," I begged him that afternoon, "try to answer." He smiled. "And lie to myself?" he answered. Don't lie. Just answer, I shouted with impatience.
You mean, when the priest asks where is God, I am to say, God is everywhere. He is the worms that await the summer heat to eat Narciso. He shares the bed with Tenorio and his evil daughters.
Oh, God, I cried in despair.
Samuel came up and touched me on the shoulder.
Perhaps things would not be so difficult if he believed in the golden carp, he said softly.
Does Florence know? I asked.
This summer he shall know, Samuel answered wisely.
What's that all about? Ernie asked.
Nothing, I said.
Come on, Abel shouted. Bell's ringing. It was Friday, and we ran to attend the ritual of the Stations of the Cross. The weather was beginning to warm up, but the winds still blew, and the whistling of the wind and the mournful cooing of the pigeons and the burning incense made the agony of Christ's journey very sad. Father Burns stood at the first station and prayed to the bulto on the wall that showed Christ being sentenced by Pilate. Two high school altar boys accompanied the priest, one to hold the lighted candle and the other to hold the incense burner. The hushed journeyers with Christ answered the priest's prayer. Then there was an interlude of silence while the priest and his attendants moved to the second station, Christ receiving the cross. Horse sat by me. He was carving his initials into the back of the seat in front of us. Horse never prayed all of the stations. He waited until the priest came near, then he prayed the one he happened to be sitting by. I looked at the wall and saw that today he had picked to sit by the third fall of Christ. The priest genuflected and prayed at the first fall of Christ. The incense was thick and sweet. Sometimes it made me sick inside and I felt faint. Next Friday would be Good Friday. Lent had gone by fast. There would be no stations on Good Friday, and maybe no catechism. By then we would be ready for Confession Saturday, and then the receiving of the sacrament on the most holy of days, Easter Sunday.
What's Immaculate Conception? Abel asked.
And Father Burns moved to the station where Christ meets his mother. I tried to concentrate. I felt sympathy for the Virgin.
Immaculate Conception, Lloyd whispered.
Yeah?
The Virgin Mary.
But what does it mean?
Having babies without...
What? I tried to shut my ears. I tried to hear the priest, but he was moving away, moving to where Simon helped Christ carry the cross. Dear Lord, I will help.
I don't know.
Everybody giggled.
Shh!
Agnes scowled at us. The girls always prayed with bowed heads throughout the stations.
A man and a woman. It takes a man and a woman,
Florence nodded.
But the Virgin.
I panicked. The Virgin Mary was the Mother of God. The priest had said she was a mother through a miracle. The priest finished the station where Veronica wiped the bloodied face of Christ, and he moved to Christ's second fall. The face of Christ was imprinted on the cloth. Besides the Virgin's blue robe, it was the holiest cloth on earth. The cross was heavy, and when he fell, the soldiers whipped him and struck him with clubs. The people laughed. His agony began to fill the church, and the women moaned their prayers. But the kids would not listen. The test is Saturday morning. Horse left his carving and looked up. The word test made him nervous.
I'll pass, he nodded.
Bones growled.
Everybody will pass, I said, trying to be reassuring. Florence doesn't believe, Rita hissed behind us.
Shh, the priest is turning.
Father Burns was at the back of the church, the seventh station. Now he would come down this side of the aisle for the remaining seven. Christ was speaking to the women. Maybe that's why they prayed so hard. Christ spoke to them. In the bell tower, the pigeons cooing made a mournful sound. The priest was by us now. I could smell the incense trapped in his frock, like the fragrance of Ultima's herbs was part of her clothes. I bowed my head. The burning incense was sweet and suffocating. The glowing candle was hypnotizing. Horse had looked at it too long. When the priest moved on, Horse leaned on me. His face was white.
A la chingada, he whispered. Voy a tirar tripas.
The priest was at the station of the crucifixion. The hammer blows were falling on the nails that ripped through the flesh. I could almost hear the murmuring of the crowd as they craned their necks to see. But today, I could not feel the agony.
Tony.
Horse was leaning on me and gagging. I struggled under his weight. People turned to watch me carrying the limp horse up the aisle. Florence left his seat to help me, and together we dragged Horse outside. He threw up on the steps of the church.
He watched the candle too long, Florence said.
Yes, I answered. Horse smiled weakly. He wiped the hot puke from his lips and said,
A la beca. I'm going to try that again next Friday.
We managed to get through the final week of catechism lessons. The depression that comes with fasting and strict penance deepened as Lent drew to its completion. On Good Friday, there was no school. I went to church with my mother and Ultima. All of the saints' statues in the church were covered with purple sheaths. The church was packed with women in black, each one stoically suffering the 3 hours of the crucifixion with the tortured Christ. Outside, the wind blew and cut off the light of the sun with its dust, and the pigeons cried mournfully in the tower. Inside, the prayers were like muffled cries against a storm which seemed to engulf the world. There seemed to be no one to turn to for solace. And when the dying Christ cried, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? The piercing words seemed to drive through to my heart and make me feel alone and lost in a dying universe. Good Friday was forlorn, heavy and dreary with the death of God's Son, and the accompanying sense of utter hopelessness. But on Saturday morning, our spirits lifted. We had been through the agony, and now the ecstasy of Easter was just ahead. Then, too, we had our first confession to look forward to in the afternoon. In the morning, my mother took me to town and bought me a white shirt and dark pants and jacket. It was the first suit I ever owned, and I smiled when I saw myself in the store mirror. I even got new shoes. Everything was new, as it should be for the First Communion. My mother was excited. When we returned from town, she would not allow me to go anywhere or do anything. Every 5 minutes she glanced at the clock. She did not want me to be late for confession.
It's time,
she finally called, and with a kiss, she sent me scampering down the goat path to the bridge, where I raced the vitamin kid and lost, then waited to walk to church with Samuel.
You ready?
I asked. He only smiled. At the church, all the kids were gathered around the steps, waiting for the priest to call us. Did you pass? Everyone asked. What did the priest ask you?
He had given each one of us a quiz, asking us to answer questions on the catechism lessons or to recite prayers.
He asked me how many persons in one God, Bones howled.
What do you say?
Four. Four, four, Bones cried. Then he shook his head vigorously. Or five. I don't know.
And you passed? Lloyd said contemptuously.
I got my suit, don't I? Bones growled. He would fight anyone who said he didn't pass.
Okay, okay, you passed, Lloyd said to avoid a fight.
What did he ask you, Tony?
I had to recite the Apostles' Creed and tell what each part meant, and I had to explain where we get original sin.
Oh, see?
A la beca.
Chingada.
Bullshit.
Horse spit out the grass he had been chewing.
Tony could do it, Florence defended me, if he wanted to.
Yeah, Tony knows more about religion and stuff like that than anyone.
Tony's gonna be a priest.
Hey, let's practice going to confession and make Tony the priest, Ernie shouted.
Yeah!
Horse reared up. Bones snarled and grabbed my pant leg in his teeth.
Tony be the priest! Tony be the priest! They began to chant.
No, no, I begged,
but they surrounded me. Ernie took off his sweater and draped it around me.
His priest's dress, he shouted, and the others followed.
They took off their jackets and sweaters and tied them around my waist and neck. I looked in vain for help, but there was none.
Tony is the priest, Tony is the priest, yeah, 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 yeah,
they sang and danced around me. I grew dizzy. The weight of all the jackets on me was heavy and suffocating.
All right, I cried to appease them. I shall be your priest.
I looked at Samuel. He had turned away.
Yay!
A great shout went up. Even the girls drew closer to watch.
Hail to our priest, Lloyd said judiciously.
Do it right, Agnes shouted.
Yeah, me first. Do it like for reals,
Horse shouted and threw himself at my feet.
Everybody quiet,
Ernie held up his hands. They all drew around the kneeling horse and myself, and the wall provided the enclosure, but not the privacy of the confessional.
Bless me, Father,
Horse said. But as he concentrated to make the sign of the cross, he forgot his lines.
Bless me, Father,
he repeated desperately.
You have sinned,
I said. It was very quiet in the enclosure.
Yes, he said.
I remembered hearing the confession of the dying Narciso.
It's not right to hear another person's confession, I said, glancing at the expectant faces around me.
Go on,
Ernie hissed and hit me on the back. Blows fell on my head and shoulders.
Go on,
they cried. They really wanted to hear Horse's confession.
It's only a game, Rita whispered.
How long has it been since your last confession? I asked Horse.
Always, he blurted out. Since I was born.
What are your sins? I asked. I felt hot and uncomfortable under the weight of the jackets.
Tell him only your worst one, Rita coaxed the horse.
Yeah,
all the rest agreed. The horse was very quiet,
thinking. He had grabbed one of my hands and he clutched it tightly, as if some holy power was going to pass through it and absolve him of his sins. His eyes rolled wildly, and he smiled and opened his mouth. His breath fouled the air.
I know, he said excitedly. One day, when Miss Violet let me go to the bathroom, I made a hole in the wall, with a nail. Then I could see into the girls' bathroom. I waited a long time. Then one of the girls came and sat down, and I could see everything. Her ass, everything. I could even hear the pee, he cried out.
Horse, you're dirty, June exclaimed. Then the girls looked shyly at each other and giggled. You have sinned, I said to Horse. Horse freed my hand and began rubbing at the front of his pants.
There's more, he cried. I saw a teacher.
No.
Yes, yes,
he rubbed harder.
Who?
One of the girls asked.
Mrs. Harrington.
Everyone laughed. Mrs. Harrington weighed about 200 pounds.
It was big,
he exploded and fell trembling on the ground.
Give him a penance,
the girls chanted and pointed accusing fingers at the pale horse.
You are dirty, horse,
they cried, and he whimpered and accepted their accusations.
For your penance, say a rosary to the Virgin, I said weakly.
I didn't feel good. The weight of the jackets was making me sweat, and the revelation of Horse's confession and the way the kids were acting was making me sick. I wondered how the priest could shoulder the burden of all the sins he heard.
The weight of the sins will sink the town into the lake of the golden carp.
I looked for Samuel. He was not joining in the game. Florence was calmly accepting the sacrilegious game we were playing, but then it didn't matter to him. He didn't believe.
Me next,
Bones shouted. He let go of my leg and knelt in front of me.
I got a better sin than Horse. Bless me, Father. Bless me, Father. Bless me, Father,
he repeated. He kept making the sign of the cross over and over.
I got a sin. I gotta confess. I saw a high school boy and girl fucking in the grass by the blue lake.
He smiled proudly and looked around.
I see them every night under the railroad bridge, the vitamin kid scoffed.
What do you mean?
I asked Bones.
Naked, jumping up and down, he exclaimed. You lie, Bones,
Horse shouted. He didn't want his own sin bettered.
No, I don't, Bones argued. I don't lie, Father. I don't lie, he pleaded.
Who was it? Rita asked.
It was Larry Saiz and that dumb gabacha whose father owns the Texaco station. Please, Father, it's my sin. I saw it. I confess.
He squeezed my hand very hard.
Okay, Bones, okay, I nodded my head. It's your sin. Give me a penance, he growled.
A rosary to the Virgin, I said to be rid of him.
Like Horse?
He shouted.
Yes. But my sin was bigger,
he snarled and leaped for my throat. He threw me down and would have strangled me if the others hadn't pulled him away.
Another rosary for daring to touch the priest,
I shouted in self-defense and pointed an accusing finger at him. That made him happy, and he settled down.
Florence next, Abel cried.
Nah, Florence ain't going to make it anyway,
Lloyd argued.
That's enough practice, I said, and started to take off the cumbersome costume, but they wouldn't let me.
Abel's right, Ernie said emphatically. Florence needs the practice. He didn't make it because he didn't practice.
He didn't make it because he doesn't believe, Agnes taunted.
Why doesn't he believe? June asked.
Let's find out. Make him tell. Chingada.
They grabbed tall Florence before he could bolt away and made him kneel in front of me.
No,
I protested.
Confess him, they chanted.
They held him with his arms pinned behind his back. I looked down at him and tried to let him know we might as well go along with the game. It would be easier that way.
What are your sins?
I asked.
I don't have any, Florence said softly.
You do, you bastard!
Ernie shouted and pulled Florence's head back.
You have sins, Abel agreed.
Everybody has sins, Agnes shouted. She helped Ernie twist Florence's head back. Florence tried to struggle, but he was pinned by Horse and Bones and Abel. I tried to pull their hands away from him to relieve the pain I saw in his face, but the trappings of the priest's costume entangled me, and so I could do very little.
Tell me one sin, I pleaded with Florence.
His face was very close to mine now, and when he shook his head to tell me again that he didn't have sins, I saw a frightening truth in his eyes. He was telling the truth. He didn't believe that he had ever sinned against God.
Oh my God, I heard myself gasp.
Confess your sins or you'll go to hell, Rita cried out.
She grabbed his blonde hair and helped Ernie and Agnes twist his head.
Confess! Confess! They cried.
Then, with one powerful heave and a groan, Florence shook off his tormentors. He was long and sinewy, but because of his mild manner, we had always underestimated his strength. Now the girls and Ernie and even Horse fell off him like flies.
I have not sinned, he shouted,
looking me square in the eyes, challenging me, the priest. His voice was like Ultima's, when she had challenged Tenorio, or Narciso's, when he had tried to save Lupito.
It is God who has sinned against me, his voice thundered,
and we fell back in horror at the blasphemy he uttered.
Florence, I heard June whimper. Don't say that.
Florence grinned.
Why?
Because it's the truth? He questioned.
Because you refuse to see the truth? Or to accept me because I do not believe in your lies? I say God has sinned against me because he took my father and mother from me when I most needed them, and he made my sisters whores. He has punished all of us without just cause. Tony,
his look pierced me.
He took Narciso. And why? What harm did Narciso ever do?
We shouldn't listen to him, Agnes had the courage to interrupt Florence.
We'll have to confess what we heard, and the priest will be mad.
The priest was right in not passing Florence, because he doesn't believe, Rita added.
He shouldn't even be here if he's not going to believe in the laws we learn, Lloyd said.
Give him a penance. Make him ask for forgiveness for those terrible things he said about God, Agnes insisted. They were gathering behind me now. I could feel their presence and their hot, bitter breath. They wanted me to be their leader. They wanted me to punish Florence.
Make his penance hard, Rita leered.
Make him kneel, and we'll all beat him, Ernie suggested.
Yeah, beat him,
Bones said wildly.
Stone him. Beat him. Kill him.
They circled around me and advanced on Florence, their eyes flashing with the thought of the punishment they would impose on the non-believer.
It was then that the fear left me, and I knew what I had to do. I spun around and held out my hands to stop them. "No," I shouted. "There will be no punishment. There will be no penance. His sins are forgiven." I turned and made the sign of the cross. "Go in peace, my son," I said to Florence.
"No," they shouted. "Don't let him go free. Make him do penance, that's the law. Punish him for not believing in God."
"I am the priest," I shouted back, "and I have absolved him of his sins." I was facing the angry kids, and I could see that their hunger for vengeance was directed at me. But I didn't care. I felt relieved. I had stood my ground for what I felt to be right, and I was not afraid. I thought that perhaps it was this kind of strength that allowed Florence to say he did not believe in God.
"You are a bad priest, Tony," Agnes lashed out at me.
"We don't want you for our priest," Rita followed.
"Punish the priest," they shouted, and they engulfed me like a wave. They were upon me, clawing, kicking, tearing off the jackets, defrocking me.
I fought back, but it was useless. There were too many. They spread me out and held me pinned down to the hard ground. They had torn my shirt off so the sharp pebbles and stickers cut into my back.
"Give him the Indian torture," someone shouted.
"Yeah, the Indian torture," they chanted. They held my arms while Horse jumped on my stomach and methodically began to pound with his fist on my chest. He used his sharp knuckles and aimed each blow directly at my breastbone. I kicked and wiggled and struggled to get free from the incessant beating, but they held me tight, and I could not throw them off.
"No, no," I shouted,
but the raining blows continued. The blows of the knuckles coming down again and again on my breastbone were unbearable. But Horse knew no pity, and there was no pity on the faces of the others.
"God," I cried, "God."
But the jarring blows continued to fall. I jerked my head from side to side and tried to kick or bite, but I couldn't get loose. Finally, I bit my lips so I wouldn't cry, but my eyes filled with tears anyway. They were laughing and pointing down at the red welt that raised on my chest where Horse was pounding.
"Serves him right," I heard. "He let the sinner go."
Then, after what seemed an eternity of torture, they let me go. The priest was calling from the church steps, so they ran off to confession. I slowly picked myself up and rubbed the bruises on my chest. Florence handed me my shirt and jacket.
"You should have given me a penance," he said.
"You don't have to do any penance," I answered. I wiped my eyes and shook my head. Everything in me seemed loose and disconnected.
"Are you going to confession?" he asked.
"Yes," I answered, and finished buttoning my shirt.
"You could never be their priest," he said.
I looked at the open door of the church. There was a calm in the wind, and the bright sunlight made everything stark and harsh. The last of the kids went into the church, and the doors closed.
"No,"
I nodded.
"Are you going to confession?" I asked him.
"No," he muttered. "Like I said, I only wanted to be with you guys."
"I cannot eat God," he added.
"I have to," I whispered. I ran up the steps and entered the dark, musky church. I genuflected at the font of holy water, wet my fingertips, and made the sign of the cross. The lines were already formed on either side of the confessional, and the kids were behaving and quiet. Each one stood with bowed head, preparing himself to confess all of his sins to Father Burns. I walked quietly around the back pew and went to the end of one line. I made the sign of the cross again and began to say my prayers. As each kid finished his confession, the line shuffled forward. I closed my eyes and tried not to be distracted by anything around me. I thought hard of all the sins I had ever committed, and I said as many prayers as I could remember. I begged God forgiveness for my sins over and over. After a long wait, Agnes, who had been in front of me, came out of the confessional. She held the curtain as I stepped in, then she let it drop, and all was dark. I knelt on the rough board and leaned against the small window. I prayed. I could hear whisperings from the confessional on the other side.